The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is. Welcome to it. Welcome to America. We are seeing the unraveling of our democracy in real time. And real time, although sometimes it may seem like, you know, the speed of light, it's going in slow motion. And that's how it feels when we're watching everything unravel around us and we're seemingly helpless to do anything. So today's installment of What the Fuck is Going On in This Country was brought to you by the Supreme Court and three stolen seats. Hey, there are days like this I just want to check out, you know, and I'm thankful, I'm grateful that we have a justice like Sonia Sotomayor sitting on the Supreme Court, because she was quite brilliant today. I hope you got to hear it. I had to go out, had a doctor's appointment this morning, so and I had to leave right around the time that it started, which was at 10 o'clock this morning, 10 Eastern. And luckily, I got into the car. We have, you know, Sirius XM, which means we do have, you know, audio from MSNBC and CNN, along with other, you know, other channels that I don't listen to. So CNN wasn't really doing anything about it. MSNBC, to their credit, carried it. Now, the Supreme Court still does not allow cameras in the court. But in the past, what they do is they record the audio. And after the hearing, they would then post it like a few hours later on the Supreme Court website. Well, today, and I don't know when they started carrying it live, but today they did. They had live audio, no video, but they had live audio, and MSNBC carried all 2 hours of it. CNN, every time I checked back, they were, you know, they were talking about Mark Meadows and other things, and they wonder why their ratings suck. Kudos to MSNBC. Thank them for carrying this, because it is really important. Unfortunately, anybody who listened, who heard those justices speak, knows what's coming. And while they may not technically overturn Roe v. Wade, I have no doubt that they're going to let this Mississippi law stand, which outlaws abortion after 15 weeks. Which upends Roe v. Wade, which made it legal for a woman to control her own body and what happens to the fetus that can't survive outside of her body until, what, week 24 or so. And that's the point up until which a woman has the right to terminate that pregnancy. But these... I'm struggling trying to find out what to call them. I don't call them pro-life because they're anything but. They're anti-women's rights, not only anti-abortion, but anti-women. And now these are the same people who have taken our slogan, My Body, My Choice, and twisted it to mean the vaccine. Well, that's all well and good, except when you're not vaccinated, you endanger everybody around you. I'll say it again. I'm a lung cancer survivor. Most of my left lung is gone. I'm at an extreme medical disadvantage. So that what the doctor said is I am no more likely to contract COVID than anyone else. I'm no more susceptible to getting it than anyone else, just as susceptible as everyone else. But if I do get it, and if I get pneumonia from the COVID, I'm really kind of fucked because I basically have one lung. So I'm very careful. And when I go out, if I'm indoors anywhere, I wear a mask. I wear an N95 mask. People who are not vaccinated, Donald Trump, go out and put others at risk. Not only do you risk your own infection, but you risk infecting other people. And that, frankly, is not only irresponsible, it's rude, it's inconsiderate, and it's dangerous. And the why I said Donald Trump under my breath is, I'm sure you've heard by now, the news that broke overnight. So Mark Meadows, what is up with this man? Donald Trump's final chief of staff, I think he was number four, who originally refused to comply with a subpoena from the January 9th commission or January 6th commission. But after Steve Bannon was indicted for contempt of Congress, I guess Mark Meadows kind of rethought his strategy, and now he is cooperating. But really, he had another reason to do this, because he has a book to sell. I guess that's what he was waiting for. He was waiting for the book to be in the neighborhood of the book's release. So this is what we learned today. And we'll get back to the Supreme Court in just a moment, because that's important. So what Mark Bennett, I'm looking for, I've got a few different write-ups of what happened. And I want to share this with you, because generally I talk off the top of my head, but this was so convoluted, I want to make sure I get it right. The Guardian newspaper over in the UK somehow obtained an advanced copy of the book called The Chief's Chief. Isn't that clever? As far as I can tell, no news outlets over here have gotten it, but The Guardian got it. Go figure. And they've written about it. And what they write is that in The Chief's Chief, Mark Meadows says that Donald Trump tested positive for COVID-19 3 days before the first debate against Joe Biden that took place on September 29th. Okay, so that would be 3 days before, is September 26th. That day, he tested positive, and then he hosts an event on the White House lawn for Amy Coney Barrett, who he named to the Supreme Court. That event, where nobody was wearing masks, I mean, a few people, but most weren't, it turns out that it was a super spreader event. And I wonder who the main spreader was. Well, Donald Trump, we already know, tested positive that day. And he stood right next to his new Supreme Court Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, and all the other people who got infected at that event. And then, as if that wasn't enough, he left there, got on Marine One, the helicopter, went to Air Force One, got on that plane. He went back and schmoozed with the press for at least 10 minutes on his way to a rally in Pennsylvania, all while he was infected with COVID. Now, he spoke up today and he's like, that's fake news. It's fake news. I tested negative. Well, no, he didn't. The test that found him positive was a PCR test, was the more accurate of the two. Then after that, he took I forget what it's called, but it's basically an antibody test. It's the fast response, not the PCR test. I'm probably getting the terminology wrong, but the less accurate of the tests, and that one turned up a false negative. So they went with that one and said, oh, look, I tested negative. I'm all good. But he wasn't. So he goes to Pennsylvania to this rally. Then, and by the way, Meadows says that at the time Trump was symptomatic. Then move ahead 3 days. Now it's September 29th. Donald Trump was positive for COVID. And if you remember in the rules of the debate, they were both supposed to be tested when they were, everyone was supposed to be tested when they arrived. Well, Donald Trump was late that day. Gee, how convenient that was. So they just let him on the stage under the, are you ready for this? Under the honor system. The honor system. Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. The honor system. Who can use the word honor in a sentence with Donald Trump? He has no honor. And this is what he does. He knows he's infected with COVID and he gets on stage with an even older man who's susceptible to this. Unbelievable. And then on October 2nd, just 3 days later, he's rushed to the hospital. He publicly announced his diagnosis, and he's taken to Walter Reed, where he's given mega doses of Regeneron and whatever other cocktail is in there to knock it out of his system. It's amazing. And then, also in this time period, on the September 26th, the day he tested positive, again, boy, he was busy that day, despite allegedly knowing that he had tested positive for COVID-19 on September 26th, Trump would go on to suggest that he caught the virus from Gold Star family members who he complained stood too close to him. Oh, that event was September 27th. It was the next day. These are families of fallen U.S. service members, and Trump inferred that they were too close to him and they're the ones who infected him.
Bullshit.
Everything about this man is vile. He's just vile. He's a liar. He doesn't give a shit about the well-being of anybody else. All he cares about is himself. And this is apparent there. So that happened. And so that's what CNN was talking about. Granted, it's an important story, but the Supreme Court was arguing, or they were arguing in front of the Supreme Court, in a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade. So earlier I said, thank goodness for Sonia Sotomayor. And why do I say that? Well, if you didn't hear it, listen to this.
Hasn't been at issue in the last 30 years is the line that Casey drew of viability.
Mm-hmm. Viability.
There has been some difference of opinion with respect to undue burden, but the right of a woman to choose, the right of to control her own body, has been clearly set for since Casey and never challenged. You want us to reject that line of viability and adopt something different. 15 justices.
15.
Over 50 years.
Over 50 years.
Have, or I should say 30 since Casey.
Okay.
Have reaffirmed that basic viability line. Four have said no. Two of them members of this court. But 15 justices have said yes, of varying political backgrounds.
Varying political backgrounds.
Now, the sponsors of this bill, the House bill in Mississippi, said we're doing it because we have new justices. The newest ban that Mississippi has put in place, the six-week ban, the Senate sponsor said we're doing it because we have new justices on the Supreme
Court. This is the important part here. Listen to this.
Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
Okay, I have to say, there's more to this, and I will. We're going to pick up there, but I had to stop there. Will this institution survive the stench? And she's talking about the politicization of the court, this decision, this action, and how over the last 50 years, there's been consensus from justices from every political background, not just the Democrats, not just the liberal Democrats. But that's all changed now because of this political stench that has infected that chamber from the right, from the extreme right, from the MAGA right, from the Q right. It's really sickening.
I don't see how it is possible. It's what Casey talked about when it talked about watershed decisions. Some of them, Brown versus Board of Education, it mentioned, and this one, have such an entrenched set of expectations in our society that this is what the court decided, this is what we will follow. that that we won't be able to survive if people believe that everything, including New York versus Sullivan, I could name any other set of rights, including the Second Amendment, by the way. There are many political people who believe the court erred in seeing this as a personal right as opposed to a militia right. If people actually believe that it's all political,
here we go.
How will we survive?
We
how
won't.
Will the court survive?
It will not.
Justice Sotomayor, I think the concern about appearing political makes it absolutely imperative that the court reach a decision well-grounded in the Constitution,
this the is the plaintiff,
structure, history, and tradition, and that carefully goes through the stare decisis factors
Casey
we've laid
did
out.
That.
No, it didn't.
Casey, yes, it did.
Every one of them. You think it did it wrong. That's your belief. But Casey did that.
Well,
and you haven't added much to the discussion in your papers as to the errors that Casey made, other than I disagree with them, Casey.
That's right. You know, round of applause for Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She is really coming into her own and making me very happy that she's there. But despite that, we know what's going to happen because this court is packed with people who want to turn the United States into Gilead. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, either read The Handmaid's Tale or watch the series. It's on Hulu. When it first started, I couldn't watch it because we were too early in the Trump years and my psyche couldn't take it. I couldn't handle it. It was too dark and it was too real. And then I got over my utter depression about where we were and I got angry. And then I started watching it and I realized, holy shit, this is where we're headed. It's absolutely where we're headed. You know, and that's only, that was today. And everybody, I mean, all the pundits, all the legal experts agree. If you listen to Brett Kavanaugh, you know, the man who Susan Collins said, oh, he believes Roe is settled law. Wonder if Susan's concerned today. Ugh. It's really sickening. And then I spoke to Alice and I talked to my daughter all the time. She's 22. And I had to tell her, there's a chance, pretty good chance right now, that, you know, your whole life, you've had the right to do with your body what you need to do with your body. That might not be the case anymore. Just sickening. Then you look at what else is going on in our nation's capital. And this ugliness, this Islamophobia from members of the Republican Party, with Lauren Boebert going after Ilhan Omar, you know, calling, basically alluding, saying that, you know, oh, she's a terrorist. Don't get in the elevator with her. Well, maybe it's safe because she's not wearing a backpack, but she could put a bomb under her quote turban and blow up the whole place. Excuse me? And so Ilhan Omar says, I want an apology. Lauren Boebert said, issued one of those, oh, if I offended anybody, I'm really sorry. But then she called Omar and Ilhan Omar graciously took the phone call and Lauren Boebert started in with her again. And she starts, you hate America. You need to apologize. You need to get out of here. You hate this country. And Ilhan Omar hung up on her. And Lauren Boebert goes on TV and brags about it and says she wanted an apology. We need an apology. Oh, fuck you. Then Ilhan Omar had to give a press conference in which she played one of many voicemail messages that greeted her after Lauren Boebert's statement. Here's one of them.
We see you Muslims saying that you're a bitch. We know what you're up to. You're all about taking over the country. Don't worry, there's plenty that will love the opportunity to take you off the face of this fucking earth.
Oh, my God.
Come get it, but you fucking Muslim piece of shit, you jihadist.
Oh, my God.
We know what you are. You're a fucking traitor. You will not live much longer, bitch. I can almost guarantee you that we the people are rising up, and you will be tried for a military tribunal, and you will be found guilty.
Oh, my God. Where are we? The United States of America? I don't recognize this place anymore. I really don't. You know, they're banning books. I put up there's a thing here. Let me show you. I've got a page up on the website, NicoleSandler.com, on the main navigation bar on the main page there. You'll see the last entry says something like buy banned books. Well, there's a, this is probably old. This is a meme I found online. It says, happy banned books week. I don't know when banned books week was, but again, this is a picture that I found. It says, these are the most banned books from public libraries and schools in the U.S. And here's the list. To Kill a Mockingbird, Catcher in the Rye, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Slaughterhouse-Five, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Lord of the Flies, Animal Farm, The Scarlet Letter, 1984, and Fahrenheit 451. All books that I read in high school, all required reading, and I turned out okay. Oh, but I'm a liberal commie bastard. I guess that's what they want to keep kids from being like me, being educated and well-rounded. So on my website, on that Buy Banned Books page, I put up links to purchase those books through bookshop.org, by the way, not through Amazon. Bookshop.org is a good place if you're going to spend money on books. Use them. Just so you know, the links, I have a little affiliate deal with them. So if you buy any of these books through my page, I'll get a small kickback commission. But here are links to Kill a Mockingbird, Catcher in the Rye, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Slaughterhouse-Five. I'm a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Lord of the Flies, Animal Farm, Scarlet Letter, 1984, Fahrenheit 451. Thankfully, they're all still in print. If these idiots, if these Neanderthals get their way, they won't be for much longer. They want to ban them. They want to burn them. Some of them are burning them. How ironic is that? Fahrenheit 451 on the list of books they want to burn. You know, I talk about the need for us to have an escape. And I did it over the last weekend, and I try to do it as often as possible these days, because watching any news is just too damn depressing. So I do try to find other diversions, other things to entertain myself. And, you know, I love music. And then there's the reading. And then there's, you know, television. I don't know about you, but I am kind of obsessed right now with the Beatles. I got the Beatles on my brain because we've been watching Get Back. It's worth do the trial thing for Disney Plus so you can watch this. It's a 3-part documentary directed by Peter Jackson, who had access to all the archives from the recording sessions of the film and the recording of the album Let It Be. And he's assembled, it's like, I think it's 9 hours of footage seeing the Beatles as they're, you know, writing these songs just by playing and noodling around. And I say they, but Paul McCartney he's got to be an alien. He can't be of this world. So, you know, I titled today's show with a little help from my friend, again, because I've got Beatles on the brain. We're gonna get into that a little bit on Friday to prepare you for the weekend. We're gonna talk music with a friend of mine who is the main music writer for Variety magazine. I've known Chris Willman for 30 years now when he was with the LA Times and Entertainment Weekly and you name it. He's been out in LA writing about music, and he wrote a great piece on this Beatles show. And so we're gonna go into the weekend talking about music, you know, music in music of the pandemic and like that, because we need an escape. And today, actually, I want to help our souls. Because when you deal with stuff like this, a school shooting, a fourth victim died today. Yesterday, when I reported on the fact that it happened in Michigan, there were three dead and nine injured. On today's What's News that runs throughout the day on the Progressive Voices Network, I talked about two students were still in critical condition, one in extremely critical condition. Well, he died. So that's four dead and I think eight more injured. It shouldn't be that way. We're staring down a Victorian era, it was court, high court in the land, who's going to strike down a woman's right to choose. Yet they say you don't have a right to choose what happens with your body when you're carrying a fetus. You have no say over that. But my body, my choice extends to getting a vaccine during a global pandemic where over 5 million people have already died in the last under 2 years. These people are twisted. They're backwards. They're sick. There's a Bruce Springsteen song from many, many years ago called One Step Up. But what you don't hear is the next part. One step up and two steps back. That means you're moving in the wrong direction. You know, there's the other saying. It's like two steps up and one step back. And that means you make a little progress and then you fall back a little bit and you make a little more progress and you fall back a bit. But when it's one step up and two steps back, you're going in the wrong damn direction. And we're going in the wrong damn direction. And there are a lot of things that are important right now. I think we need to take to the streets and en masse. Now, this Supreme Court decision won't come down until June because they always save the big ones for the end. So they may know where they are, you know, this weekend. The justices may get together and have a little informal vote. We won't know until Chief Justice John Roberts will assign the opinion to be written by one of the justices. I'm thinking he'll keep it for himself. My husband, David, doesn't think he's willing to sacrifice his legacy on overturning Roe v. Wade because he doesn't want that to be what he's responsible for. The majority of this nation thinks the abortion laws as they are right now are just fine. Thank you very much. So although Republicans have used the issue of choice as a fundraiser for all these years, somebody didn't get the memo. They never expected it to be made into law. They always wanted to use it as a wedge issue and as a fundraiser. It was the boogeyman they could hold out there and tell you that we're going to get rid of Roe v. Wade. We're going to overturn it. But they never intended to do it. And frankly, there are a lot of elected officials freaking out right now because they know this is death to them. So we need to organize around this. David's here. Yes?
Since you took my name in vain, I have to clarify the statement. I don't necessarily think that Roberts is going to vote against overturning Roe.
Okay.
I am hopeful that he does not want to be remembered as the next Roger B. Taney, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court who issued the Dred Scott decision.
Uh-huh.
I would not bet a dollar of anyone else's money on anything fucking court is going to do.
I hear you. I gotcha. All right. David Sloan, everybody. That's my husband. All right. So anyway, as I was saying, with all this stuff going on and we're coming up on 2 years that many of us have been isolated from much of humanity because of this killer virus that these idiots are going around unvaccinated and saying, my body, my choice. And they don't understand what they're saying. We need some self-soothing. We need to take care of ourselves. So I was thrilled when I'm perusing the Twitter machine earlier this week. And I see Kelly Carlin there. And I always perk up when I see a tweet from Kelly because she's not only, you know, smart and has, you know, a way with words, unlike me at the moment, but she does good work and she helps people. And here's what she wrote. She said, "The last 2 years have been so much about just getting through it all. One thing I know is that I can't thrive that way. I need time to stop and gather myself. I need time to bring all of myself back together to feel what's needed now. Do you feel scrambled? Are you just walking through the end of the year trying to get to the end? Are you wondering, what do I really need and want? Are you ready to release the last year and just let it go? Yes, please, 2 years. Damn it. Every year," back to Kelly, she writes, "I do a year-end practice that lets me get clear in my mind and heart about who I am now and what I want and need in the new year. I've never shared the process except with close friends and clients before. If you're needing some me time, some clarity, a way to let the year go, join me and my friends and clients for a fun, deep, and festive event." And Kelly's got her winter solstice day-long, I guess, virtual retreat coming up. And this is just so needed right now. Kelly Carlin, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Nicole. It's so good to see you.
It's good to see you, too. It's been a while. In fact, I think the last time we spoke, it was when you were on the show last, and it was near the beginning of the pandemic when we were all inside and, you know, having cabin fever, and you led us through a guided meditation, right? It wasn't good for the people who were driving listening, but I know so many people got a lot out of it. So aside from being George's daughter and having a lot of George Carlin's storytelling abilities and talent, and you do a radio show, and you're an author, and you're a performer, you're also a coach. You tell us about you. You're an author, performer, podcast, and radio host, speaker, life coach, and teacher. You have a master's in Jungian psychology, and you lead these workshops. I was fortunate enough to do a series with you on the weekends that I got a lot out of. You're great with people. So I love that you're doing this because I think a lot of people really need it right now.
Yeah, I need it. We all need it. And you're right. It isn't like just this year. It is the 2 years. And you know,
and the four before that, or the three before that.
It's the 5 years.
It's the 5 years.
For those of us on the left, the Trump years were not easy. They were not. My blood pressure was permanently high until he left office. And then my GP was like, "Oh, look, your blood pressure's gone down."
I'll bet.
Shocking. Thank you, Nicole, for having me. And, you know, what I've been up to mainly the last 3 years is I lead a coaching program called Women on the Verge.
Right.
Go deep to take the leap. Basically, I work with women who are struggling with, you know, trying to find out what their next chapter in life is. Maybe they're struggling with self-doubt or perfectionism or always putting themselves last or all that lovely family of origin and cultural baggage that we have that as women we carry around differently than men do. I mean, men definitely have their share of bullshit also. Am I allowed to say that?
Oh, you are. Yes, you are. Okay, I said fuck, so you can say bullshit.
Oh, that's right. Okay, good. So, and I work with women over a year long and we do in-depth work and help people like really get ready for the most authentic, fulfilling next chapter in their life. And what I've done is I've taken everything that I've learned through my Jungian studies and my Buddhist studies and then my own life, stepping into the spotlight, doing my solo show, doing my memoir, and all of the dances I did with my parents and all of that, took all of that information and I've bundled it into a beautiful little package for people. But this end of the year thing, I love doing. First of all, it's my favorite time of year, and is not it? Because I mean, yeah, I love the twinkly Christmas lights and things like that. I mean, definitely love that stuff. But there's something about the invitation to get still and quiet and to get into the cave a little bit and like hibernate and pull away from the energy of life that's always trying to drag us forward at a pace that we're not. It's not a human pace. Capitalism is not a human based pace. Or value system, mm-hmm, right? It's mm-hmm. based on, and look, it's here, and I'm an entrepreneur, and I charge money for my services.
Sure,
I get it.
As you should.
You know, I get it. It's the as my one of my wonderful business coaches says to me, it's the currency of adulthood. Unfortunately, capitalism is. Yeah. So we all have to participate. But really, like, because I am a daughter of one who raged against the machine, I do that in my own, I have my own little subversive way of being, which is really teaching people how to live from their soul and not from their ego all the time. And so this year-end event thing is an opportunity to do that. And anybody can do that. I mean, the lighting of the candles, if you're Jewish and you do the lighting of the candles ritual, that is a way of pausing and contemplating this time of year and what it means for us, you know, beyond the religious part of it and all of that, but just the personal part of it. And even, you know, that tradition of families that go to church on Christmas Eve, like, you know, maybe it's the one time a year you go as a Catholic, right?
Right.
But, you know, and especially Catholicism, it's full of magic. It's full of you know, incense and lighting and music, right? It's very much a numinous experience. So part of what I love to do is help people plug into that. So I love to talk about, like, the mythology of this time of year. I talk about Persephone. I talk about the underworld and the importance of going down deep within ourselves to find that rooted, basic, essential part of who we are, so that when we come back up in the new year, and, you know, on the solstice, on the 21st, is when the days get shorter, and then on that day, the days immediately get lighter, right?
Right.
Like, we all watch the Grange thing in Ireland, how, like, the light comes in on the solstice, and, like, all of the Neolithic people are like, yay, the sun didn't die! So it's that. So the name of my event is Light Your Year on Fire, in honor of lighting that thing on fire, that thing inside of you, that eternal source of yes, that eternal source of spark, that eternal source of desire. But really, if you want to have a 2022 that's more meaningful and purposeful, instead of this other thing we've been doing, which is just surviving and getting by and ready, you know, and always waiting for the next variant to drop, like, yeah. You need to stop and pause. So whether, you know, you do it with me or your family or just in your own journal, I highly recommend this year-end practice. And it's not about, you know, New Year's resolutions right. and all that kind of stuff. It's about getting into your heart and really owning what is it that I want to accomplish this year that I know is a part of, as Mary Oliver, the poet, says, this one precious life.
Right. And I love all of that. And I aspire to that. My problem is, you know, doing the work that I do, being entrenched in what's happening not only in the world, but especially in this country, and seeing, for instance, today at the Supreme Court, watching as we take these steps backwards. I was talking about the Springsteen song, One Step Up, but it's two steps back. You're moving in the wrong direction. And it's not only that, it's Donald Trump is going to run for president again. It's the Lauren Boberts and the Marjorie Taylor Greens are accepted by one of our two major political parties, that kind of behavior is okay. It's the weight of the world literally coming down on me. And it's not just me, because I hear from listeners all the time who are so just feeling weighed down by this. I felt a great sense of relief when Trump left the White House. It was awesome. A weight lifted from my shoulders that lasted for about 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Nicole, it's so important to understand that no matter what it looks like out there in the culture or in our personal lives, whatever struggle or suffering there is, or difficulty or anxiety provoking events, there's always going to be something. You know, if it's not this version of it, it's going to be another version of it. So we have to have a daily practice of connecting to the part of ourselves that is not plugged into this time and space continuum, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the stuff that, like, Buddha and Jesus taught, you know, it's the perennial wisdom stuff. It's the fact that there is a part of us that feels more eternal and timeless and is steps outside of this ongoing treadmill wheel of information, bad news, fear, threat, all that kind of stuff. We have to let our bodies get out of the sympathetic fight or flight, mm-hmm. which is what happens when we're in the news and we're hearing all of this, and move over into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is a time of recovery. And it's a natural thing our body knows how to do, but we as humans have to make sure that we put time every day to do something like that. So whether it's a mindfulness meditation with Thich Nhat Hanh's app, he's got an app out called Plum Village, highly recommend it. Plum Insight Village. Timer, do some yoga nidra, get to yoga class. I don't care what. Go take a walk in nature and know you don't get to listen to a podcast during that walk. And this time of year, I want to give you the gift, Nicole. I want you to be able to do this. I want you for at least a solid day, if not three, no TV, no newspapers, no internet, no social media.
Oh, okay. That's hard. No TV at all. Like, I can't watch the Beatles thing. I could get, you know, no news.
Yes, you can watch the Beatles thing, but no news.
Okay.
I want no news media, no social media, no nothing where you're going to get bombarded with new information. I only want you to be able to put on some music or watch something that's soothing or entertaining. Because what happens is, the sympathetic nervous system is always getting triggered. Every 5 minutes, we're checking our feed. You're checking the SCOTUS thing. And your adrenal system is just on high alert all the time. No bueno. No bueno for your mind. No bueno for your body. This is, you know, how you get disease in your body and how and why we're all anxious and depressed. If you can cut yourself off for at least 24 hours, 3 days, 5 days, I do a 7-day cleanse. Wow. I do no media, no internet for 7 days between Christmas and New Year's.
Nice.
Your mind and your body will truly, truly thank you. And if you can do that weekly by like making sure your Sundays are that day or your Saturdays or something like that, or after your 6 p.m. off, whatever it is, you will learn how to be in the off mode and to be able to sit with what's that with, you know, you'll watch your mind going, oh, I want to check my Twitter feed. I want to, but we breathe,
right?
We come back to our feet. We feel our body in our chair. You know, this mindfulness stuff is pretty spectacular stuff. It just is. And they've proved it. The science guys have proved it. And the Buddha was talking about it 2,500 years ago. So it really understands the wiring of the human brain and what the human brain wants to latch on to. And it's fine to latch on to stuff and it's fine to have all of that, but you need time away from it.
And look, listeners will tell you, I preach it all the time. Go out and listen to music. I mean, I saw two concerts in the last month after 2 years of not seeing live music, and I'm a music person. So I got to see Todd Rundgren. Oh my God. Ugh. And then Jackson Brown and James Taylor. I was in heaven, right? It was like great. I wore my mask, you know, because I'm careful. But it was just so good to be able to do that. And listeners will tell you, I'm always saying, do something, laugh. And you know that. Look, Kelly Carlin, you have the name. I got to ask you. So you studied all this. You studied a lot to get to where you are. Your father was one of the most astute observers of the human condition that I've ever witnessed, and he had a way with words, obviously. There's one bit that he did that I've played on the air over the years that stays with me when he's talking about the government and they don't care about you. They don't give a shit about, you know, that basically you have to make your own way. And I'm wondering, when in your growing up did you make this decision to go there? Because you also could have gone the other way. You do perform. You have performed. You did a wonderful one-woman show that I saw. You wrote the book, Carlin Home Companion, which was just wonderful. But was your dad into the mindfulness, or did that grow out separately?
Yeah, my dad and my mom were both seekers. My mom was definitely a big seeker of this stuff. And we were all into it in the 80s, you know, all the new age stuff. All of us were psychics and energy healing. You know, we live in LA. So, you know, we were all into that. And, you know, and we were basically agnostics in my family. But you know, my dad had a bit also about the big electron. Like that was his way of talking about the mysterious and organizing energy of the universe, you know. So he took acid. He had these big spiritual right. moments in his life. And I think for me, I think I'm both of my parents in a deep way. I'm certainly a cultural observer, and I love seeing an interesting take on the world. But I've always been fascinated, and I think because we had a lot of dysfunction in my house growing up, as you know, Nicole, you saw mm-hmm. my show, you know,
I
my
did.
Book.
I do.
I think I've always been fascinated about, you know, how to get through that, how to get to the other side of that. And why are we here? That's the big question I'm always fascinated with, is why are we here? And what are we supposed to do with this time? And that's why I loved Jungian psychology, because it's not just about fixing people with symptoms, but Jungian psychology asks the big question, like, who are we actually? And why are we here? And this whole idea of the collective unconscious, and that we're connected to this archetypal energy that's bigger than our egos, and the story of humanity, and this basic urge we have as humans, and you could call it like a soul-based urge, to want to move towards our most actualized whole selves. I've always been fascinated with that. And maybe in some ways that is a counterbalance to my father, who on stage and how he investigated the world was he felt that we had hit some sort of, you know, pretty much genetic cul-de-sac as a creature mm-hmm. And that our species, because of greed, could not overcome the empathy. There wasn't enough empathy to overcome the greed, kind of a thing. And he really believed that we're kind of circling the drain. And I get that. I mean, I look out there and I can see that storyline too. But when I got my master's in psychology, my dad came to my graduation and he was so excited for me, so proud, because he didn't have the time in his life or the luxury to really investigate and study some of these things that I was studying. So he was always asking me questions, wanted to know what I was learning, you know, how I was looking at the world now. You know, I was kind of his ambassador to that road. When I started practicing Buddhism, you know, in my life, he too was, I always tried to get him to sit down and learn mindfulness meditation. And these days it would have been great because he would have had an app and he would have been able to do it really easily. Uh-huh. But, you know, he was a type A, always, always going, never able to shut it off. I think part of me saw his workaholism. Part of me saw the toll that being on the road for 45 years took on his body. I saw the price of fame and the price of success on his life. And I knew that I wanted to do it differently. And I think that's why I'm also so committed to really teaching people to that they have a choice always, every moment, to, of course, step into it, go for it. You know, I'm an entrepreneur now. I'm an artist still. I'm a writer. I'm always wanting to become and make new things. But there's also this place that I need to be still and quiet in also. So, you know, Dad, we would have some of these conversations about this stuff. And he, you know, he always saw the big picture. You know, if you listen to his material, sometimes it was political. Sometimes it was about the owners of the country, like you talk about.
That's right.
Sometimes it was fart jokes.
That's right.
But he, you know, the thing that I feel so blessed to have from my father is the willingness to take a step on, you know, one side or the other, to look at things with the perspective that no one else can, to ask the big questions of us. And he asked them as a comedian, and I asked them as a, I don't know what you want to call me, a teacher, a coach, a artist, I don't know. I love asking the big questions, and I love asking the questions of a client that are the big questions that make their mind just expand out enough that they see themselves in a bigger way and see more possibility for themselves. And that's all I want for everyone, for the planet, for humans, for animals, for trees.
Right. And, you know, you bring such a unique perspective to it all because you did grow up in that area. And yep. You're still friends with so many of these creative, very funny people who also knew your dad, who are in that life. And so you've got one foot in the world of entertainment and comedy, and yet this other foot in the world of Jungian psychology and Buddhist, you know, mindfulness. And it's an interesting dichotomy. And you still do the show on XM. You do a podcast still?
I haven't done my cup podcast the last 3 years. I've been focusing on this business, Women on the Verge. And I needed to find my bearings again after I did my solo show and my memoir came out. And I had spent about 8 years, you know, in the spotlight as George Carlin's daughter. And I needed to do that, Nicole. You and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. I needed to walk through the fire of that in order to fully own it and to wrestle with my own demons and my own needs and all of that. And then in 2017, I needed to pull back from all of that. And plus, you know, that was the year that Gary Shandling died also.
Right.
And that was really like, it was just his birthday a few days ago. And he was such a mentor for me. He was someone who really walked side by side with me as Paul Provenza and mm-hmm. Louis Black, like other, my, you know, these other comedians who are friends and mentors of mine. But I knew that I needed to figure out what was next for me. And I wanted to circle back around. And I've been wanting since 2004 to do this women's work, you know, to really help women step into an authentic place in their life that I'd gotten a chance to do. And so what's happening for me now is I really want to find the way to really weave that together publicly now. You know, the pandemic, we've all been in the cave for 2 years.
Yes.
And of course, if you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you know, I talk about this kind of stuff, but I kind of want to come out of the closet and figure out a way to kind of really merge these two people that I am. And I guess I do that already by just showing up
yes,
as me.
You do.
But there's a way in which the culture either sees me as one thing or the other. And sometimes they get a little mixed up. And so I'm right in the middle, Nicole, of figuring out, like, how do I do this? And so I know there's a book that wanted to be born 4 years ago. It wasn't ready yet. It's been stewing. I've been pregnant with it, writing all this content for the women and all this kind of stuff. So I'm pretty sure that in 2022, there's going to be some book writing going on. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Great. And then, you know, this event you have, it's a half a day workshop. It's a, what are you calling it? You're calling it
it's a half day retreat.
Retreat.
Is what I'm calling it.
It's a retreat. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's an in-home retreat.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and you're the first person I ever Zoomed with. I did Zoom for one of your webinar. That was my first experience with Zoom. So you're an old hand at this. And you got it down to a science where we had a nice group of people. It was every weekend for a number of weeks. This event that you're doing, it's Saturday, December 11th. It's for 4 hours. It's a half a day. And so tell us what's going to happen during that.
So during that, we're going to get together. I'm going to talk a little bit about the stories around this time of year, why it's sacred, why humanity has made this a sacred time of year, a little bit like I already talked about here. I've got a little homework for everyone to do. You're going to get some information together before you land in the space. And we're going to do some work around what were our wins and our victories in the last year? What were some of our losses, some of our things that fell apart? We're going to be able to own the wins and celebrate and work through and shed some of the losses. We're going to do a active imagination, as you know, Nicole, you were there on Sunday Unplugs. Uh-huh. We used to do these imaginal journey things. We're going to do one of those. We're going to get a chance to shed some things and collect the gifts of the year. We're going to be able to set an intention in a really beautiful way. And plus, we're just going to take some time to be in community together, to honor this part of our life, to meet new people, people who are interested in this kind of stuff. And then also, I'm going to share a little bit about and give people a special introduction to this new course I'm starting in January, which is a part of the new content I've created, which I'm very excited about, which is, it's not for co-ed yet. Later in the year, guys, I want you to hear me, men. I've heard you for the last 2 years. You want me to work with you. We're going to work that out. But
is this on the 11th only for women?
No, this is for both.
Okay, gotcha.
It's absolutely for everybody. But I will be at the end of it talking a little bit about my new thing, this 12-week course called A New Path Forward. But then after that, I want people to have drinks and food in their space, and we're going to hang out like it's a party for like a half hour, however much time we have, and just, you know, just be in the social. And I'll have breakout rooms if you want to go talk to your friends in one room, or we can all just break out in rooms and move around. You know, I want to figure out a way to just make this festive. But what you will walk away with is you're going to walk away with a sense of a completion, of feeling like the year is complete for you, knowing what's not complete and what you're really hungry for next year, and an intention, a word, a phrase or something that will help hold kind of the energy and the meaning that you want 2022 to have for you. And we're going to source that from a very deep place inside of you, so that it'll be something that you can put on a postcard or put on a sticky on your mirror, and will help ground you and remind you of what your year is about and what you really want.
It's tools to get you through the shit that we encounter every day. It's getting into your own stuff, owning it, and then letting it go, right?
Yes, and tapping deeply into the wisdom that lives inside of all of us. You know, so many of us are looking for a quick fix this, or a guru, or someone just give me the answers. Mm. All my work is about, how can I help you see that you've got these incredible resources within you, your intuition, your deep wisdom, access to all sorts of wise beings inside of you and perspectives. So it's about you learning that you have what you need to do this. Yeah, we're all broken a little bit. We're all wounded. We're all a little road weary after the last 2 to 5 years. But we also have infinite potential and possibility inside of us in every single moment.
Well, and we need to be reminded of that. And you do that. You and what I love is that you know, if you go to your website, it's thekellycarlinsite.com. When you read about you, your bio, it's about the work you do is all your own work as well. You're helping other people, but it also is your own healing experience. It's your own.
It's an
ongoing effort that's never done.
It's never done. It's all our life's work. And I know that whenever I reach a point in my life and I've figured a little something out or walked through something, my first instinct is, how can I share that with others so that people will find their way too?
Kelly Carlin, so if my listeners want to participate, what should they do? How do they get in touch with you, and how does it work?
Great thing. So here's what to do, because it's not like a real URL. It's just a little landing page for people to go to. So follow me on Twitter. If you're on Twitter, Kelly_Carlin, or if you're on Instagram, follow me at Kelly Carlin is here.
Okay.
Or go to my website. A little thing is going to pop up saying, come onto my mailing list, because in the next 10 days, we're going to be sending out emails to people on my mailing list about this event.
Okay.
And so you'll be able to find on Twitter and Instagram, I'm talking about this event a lot.
You know what?
Right now.
And also, I'll put a link on my blog where I post today's show to that landing page as well.
Perfect. I will give you the link for that, and people can just go right onto your blog and see it from there. And, you know, people, you'll find me.
Awesome. I enjoy doing the workshops with you, because you bring, you know, a sense of humor to it. It's not all so serious, and you don't worry about letting the fucks fly. You are your father's daughter, after all, and you do have his way with words, and it's entertaining and it's mind opening.
Thank you, Nicole. I really appreciate that, Nicole, because I really, you know, my whole life I've always felt half like Lucille Ball and half like Marianne Williamson. So in some way, it's all coming together.
I hear you. Kelly Carlin, so great to see you and to talk with you. I'm sorry it's been so long, but it makes the time we do get together more special. So great seeing you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Nicole. Always a pleasure to hang out with you.
For me, too. All right. You take care. We'll talk again soon. Kelly Carlin.
Bye, sweetie.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. And there you go, Kelly. She again, it's the Kelly Carlin site.com. I will. Sorry, the video. I'm not fast enough on the changing the picture here. I'll give you the contact information and you can get in touch. She's not a doctor. So she's not a doctor. She's not a psychologist, but she has a master's in Jungian psychology and in coaching. And in, I mean, she's so well-rounded that she get, you know, the benefits of all of it. I'm telling you, I did this a workshop with her that went on for, I want to say about 6 weeks. It was every Sunday for 6 weeks. And it was really wonderful. It helped. It's not a panacea. It's not a cure-all. But again, she's, You met her. You just met her. That's Kelly. And she's not afraid. She talks like we do. You know, she lets the fucks fly. And she's got a great sense of humor. And it's not like you're in some stuffy psychology, you know, new agey kind of thing. So it's just something that is there if you're interested. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. Read her book. I mean, if you want to know, she wrote a book a few years ago called A Carlin Home Companion. And Kelly Carlin was an only child. So it was her and her mother who was sounded like an amazing woman in and of herself, and George Carlin. And the insights you get are pretty remarkable. And she did a one-woman show, which was basically the book, her telling the story. So, I got to meet her in person a few years ago when she toured with the show. She came down here. So we saw it then. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. It's important. I talk about it all the time. In this case, I say, do as I say, not as I do, because I don't take enough time for myself. I'm trying to, and I think you can tell that, right? Oh, boy. All right. And just like on Friday, we are going to not talk politics. We'll start the show with the latest, with what's happening. I mean, Friday is the day we allegedly run out of money and the government could shut down if the Republicans keep up their obstructionist ways. So we will cover the news, anything important, and then we'll talk music. And, you know, I don't know about you, as for someone who worked for many, many years in the music industry. I did music radio. I'm so out of touch with most current music. I mean, I'm a music snob. I have very eclectic tastes, but I don't know popular music. But Chris Wellman will join us on Friday. He is the music guy for Variety Magazine. He was with Entertainment Weekly and the LA Times and freelancing for everybody. And he wrote an amazing piece that's in Variety about this Beatles series, the documentary series Get Back on Apple Plus. That's really good. So, and he interviewed Peter Jackson. So maybe we'll play some of that too. Anyway, it's just my way of trying to expand what we do and not make it all about politics and how horrible things are here, because I do believe you manifest what you concentrate on. So I want to, this is my thing, and it's not a resolution. It's just one of my pledges to myself, is that as we go forward, I want to do a more balanced program. So it's not all politics and it's not all, oh my God, we are so fucked, but bring in some good things like Kelly Carlin. All right. With that, we're done. Tomorrow it's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. Lots of news to cover as well. And I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everybody. I will leave you with the news. All right. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you tomorrow. Here we go.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The 651st mass shooting of the year left 3 people dead and another 8 seriously wounded at Oxford High School in Oxford, Michigan. The shooter, a 15-year-old sophomore at the school, he was taken into custody by police. The weapon recovered at the scene was a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, which was bought Friday by the suspect's father.
Investigators say they have a tremendous amount of video footage to examine as they work to gather more information about the incident. They're also looking at the suspect's social media accounts. Students who died were 14-year-old Hannah St. Juliana, 17-year-old Madison Baldwin, and 16-year-old Tate Meyer. Two of the wounded are in critical condition, one extremely critical. In a related story, a federal appeals court on Tuesday upheld California's ban on large-scale ammunition magazines. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled 7-4 that the law does not significantly limit the right to self-defense. That decision was considered likely to pave the way for the court to approve the state's complete ban on assault-style semi-automatic rifles. The judge, Susan Graber, a Clinton appointee, wrote for the court that the ammunition restriction, quote, reasonably supports California's effort to reduce the devastating damage wrought by mass shootings. The Supreme Court, which hasn't and won't do anything to reverse our massive gun problem in this country, hears arguments today, Wednesday, in a case directly challenging Roe v. Wade. The Mississippi law before the court bars most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy, a standard that violates legal precedent set by the 1973 decision. Several similar laws have been enacted across the country recently with the aim of getting a direct challenge to Roe before the high court. An even more restrictive law in Texas, banning abortions as early as 6 weeks and that uses vigilantes for enforcement, was unbelievably allowed to go into effect in September, despite some skepticism from some of the Supreme Court justices. One estimate from a pro-abortion rights group says that 26 states are certain or likely to ban abortions if the precedent is overturned. Moving on to COVID, government officials are considering stricter testing requirements for everyone traveling to the U.S., as concerns about the Omicron variant rise. These new requirements could include a COVID-19 test the day before a traveler's flight, and then having all travelers, including U.S. citizens and permanent residents, test again on U.S. soil. Meanwhile, the Biden administration is working with vaccine manufacturers on contingency plans in case the vaccines need to be modified to better fight new variants of the virus. At a White House news conference on Tuesday, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said they are actively looking for the first cases of the Omicron variant in the U.S. Scientists are still trying to find out more about the strain's transmissibility and severity, but Dr. Fauci said U.S. officials believe there is good reason to think that existing vaccines will provide, quote, some degree of protection. Oh, boy. Advisors from the FDA have recommended the first pill to treat COVID-19. Molnupiravir, taken for 5 days, cut the risk of hospitalization and death by 30% for people at high risk of severe illness. Next, FDA officials have to decide whether to authorize it. Pfizer also has a COVID pill, also under review. Meanwhile, a federal judge on Tuesday blocked President Biden's vaccine mandate for healthcare workers from taking effect next week. Stay tuned. Moving on to an update on those looming legislative deadlines, and it's not pretty. Government funding runs out this Friday, December 3rd. Both sides have reportedly agreed to avoid a shutdown, but a group of congressional Republicans are reportedly plotting to force a shutdown in order to defund the Biden vaccine mandate on the private sector. The group includes Senator Mike Lee and at least 14 others in the Senate who signed a letter last month vowing to, quote, use all means at our disposal to block passage of a continuing resolution that doesn't stop implementation of a vaccine mandate. There's also apparently been a tiny bit of progress on the NDAA, with reports saying it could be wrapped up by the Senate as soon as Wednesday afternoon. Not holding my breath. And then there's the debt limit, about which we don't know much other than the fact that Schumer and McConnell are talking. That deadline, hitting the debt ceiling, is in just about 2 weeks. Well, what a difference an indictment can make. Mark Meadows, the former guy's one-time chief of staff, is now cooperating with the House Select Committee investigating January 6th. He's providing records and has agreed to appear for an initial interview, thereby avoiding a criminal contempt referral for defying a subpoena from the committee. Perhaps the reason Mark Meadows is cooperating now is because he has a book to sell. And the first story we've heard from it is a bombshell. The Guardian obtained a copy of the book, The Chief's Chief, including the claim that Trump tested positive for COVID 3 days before his first debate against Joe Biden on September 29th. After testing positive, he then went to an event on the White House lawn for Amy Coney Barrett, that event now known to be a super spreader event. From that, Trump got on the helicopter, then to Air Force One, to fly to Pennsylvania for a rally. Meadows said at the time, Trump was symptomatic. So fast forward a couple of days. Trump arrives late for the debate, so he was not tested there, but allowed on stage using the honor system. Isn't it ironic, don't you think? Then on October 2nd, just a few days later, he publicly announced his diagnosis and was rushed to the hospital. Despite allegedly knowing that he had tested positive for COVID-19 on September 26th, Trump went on to suggest that he caught the virus from Gold Star families, who he complained stood too close to him at a September 27th event that honored families of fallen U.S. service members. In reality, he put every one of those Gold Star family members in danger of catching COVID from him. Just stunning. Today's December 1st. It's World AIDS Day. And President Joe Biden will mark the occasion by unveiling a new national HIV/AIDS strategy with the goal of ending the HIV epidemic by 2030. And finally, CNN has suspended Chris Cuomo just one day after the New York Attorney General's office released documents that showed he was more deeply involved than previously known in helping his brother, the former governor, Andrew Cuomo, respond to allegations of sexual harassment. The length of the suspension? Indefinite. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
And I help them become members of SEIU 509 and form unions at their workplaces, so that they can fight for better working conditions where they work. And I got into the labor movement actually through college. My first semester of college, our faculty were going on strike. They had won their union election about 2 years before, and the university administration was refusing to bargain in good faith. So it forced them to a situation where they were going onto the strike lines, and I was part of a student organization that was trying to raise awareness to other undergrads and encourage them to come out and join the faculty themselves on the strike lines. So.
Awesome. Great. Thanks so much, Jeff. And thanks for the work that you do as well. And I think part of the reason Emily and I wanted to do this show today on labor unions and organizing and how young people are really leading and have led a lot of labor movements historically is because we saw so much about this in the news over the course of the fall. I think, you know, more about strikes and more about labor organizing than I recall, any time in the past 10 years in the news. And so I'm excited to dig into this a little bit more with you guys. But before we hop into more about what was going on over the course of this year and this past fall and how we have gotten to this point where we're able to talk about workers' rights with folks able to access those rights at a much higher level than they have in the past. David, at a high level, can you tell us a little bit more about what labor unions are and why they form for folks who might be sort of looking for a primer here?